You are all checked in now, so if you can just take a seat, and the doctor will see you shortly.
Right, okay, sir, I'm just going to get you to step on the scales for a second.
Have you considered losing some weight out with your joint pain?
Achaz maspik, en bishvilech yoter.
You can't be fat and happy.
It's a tea that you drink, and it melts all your belly fat.
All right, class, who can tell me what a healthy snack looks like?
Before we start you on treatment, we're going to need you to lose some weight.
You'll never have a baby unless you lose weight.
Itne alu khaogi to alu ban jaogi.
Thank you for waiting. The Fat Doctor will see you now.
Welcome to episode 9. I can't believe we've done 8 already and we're on the 9th one. This is crazy. I hope you've been enjoying yourself, and I want to thank you once again for downloading and supporting. For those of you who are supporting me on Patreon, we've had over 3,500 downloads so far, which is just amazing. And I'm loving this. I really am. I'm so glad that you can be here with me. Today, I'm going to be talking to a friend of mine. Her name is Amy Snelling. She's a PT. She's got a lot of really cool things to say. And without further ado, let's get into it.
Amy, so thank you so much for joining me today. So excited to get to talk to you. It's very weird having these kind of like formal conversations with people who are my friends and whom I WhatsApp on a regular basis, and you know, who I'm arranging to meet up with soon, because it feels a bit weird. It's almost like I have to be like different, Natasha. We've got to be different today, but I'll try and be as professional and yet me at the same time, as I'm sure you will be. For those who don't know you, please introduce yourself to everyone and tell us a bit about yourself.
Oh, this is always really difficult, isn't it?
Yeah.
I am Amy Snelling. I am a personal trainer. I'm in Norwich in the UK, because I know that you're very world famous now, Natasha. You've got people listening from all over. So I work in a commercial gym. So that is, you know, a big gym chain. So my clients they represent a range of different people, different walks of life. I haven't been a personal trainer for very long. I've done all sorts of things. I had my own dog creche and dog grooming business. I was also a primary school teacher for a little while. And I think when I start to talk about these different jobs, it just sort of shows like how old I am. That sort of reveals my age. But I've done a fair few things, and it was my own experiences with sort of like, you know, disordered exercise behaviours and disordered eating that made me want to become a personal trainer who now works from the ethos that I work from, which is a weight inclusive ethos, with very much standing against pursuits of intentional weight loss and all the problems that they cause, and sort of helping people navigate their fitness and their health, but you know, from that sort of more holistic lens and approach, taking wider considerations into account and that sort of thing. So that's me in a short whistle stop.
In a nutshell. And it's good, because I think it's important to talk about how we met. So the history is that I started talking about body inclusivity or body neutrality, probably, I think I start with, or maybe even positivity. I don't even know the term. I don't know what I was hashtagging to begin with. But and I met Jeanette, who is the mindset nutritionist. We're going to be talking to her on another podcast. And after talking to her for a little while, I was just like, you know, we need to set up a little organization, you know, health professionals against weight stigma. And Jeanette just was like, yeah, let's do it. So then we kind of had a little chat, and she was like, well, you know, what do we need to do? And I said, oh, I think we need someone who's kind of, you know, an expert on fitness. And she immediately said, well, I know who that's going to be. And she told me your name straight away. She gave me she texted me a link to your bio on Instagram. And I clicked on it, I looked at it, and I went, this person's amazing. And of course, I wasn't following anyone at the time, because I didn't know that many people in this little community that we have. So I clicked on your bio. I was like, she's too cool. She's not going to want to be with us. So Jeanette approached you, and then you were one of the first people that was just like, yeah, I'm totally up for it, even though you're doing so many other things. So we have kind of bonded over that. And I think I was a bit flabbergasted, actually. I think you completely changed my perception of fitness, exercise, the fitness industry as a whole, because my experience of the fitness industry up until I'd met you had not been a particularly positive one. It hasn't all been bad, to be fair, but it's never felt inclusive before, and no one ever looked at me and kind of affirmed me and made me feel the way that you make me feel whenever you talk to me, just about life, really, but especially when it comes to fitness and exercise. And I think it's because it's A, your expertise, I mean, it's what you do, it's your profession, you're a professional. So when you say something to me, you know, I listen to you and I recognize your, you know, your professionalism and your expertise. But I think it's also because of the body that you're in. You know, you're not in a large body, and yet you probably are one of the strongest allies that I've ever met. And probably, you know, whenever I'm feeling a bit crappy about something and I send out a group text, you're usually one of the sort of fiercest responders, actually, and the one that makes me feel so kind of validated and heard and listened to. So I'm curious to know how somebody in whom the issues of kind of fat oppression don't necessarily apply to personally, and of course you have had it, your experience of disordered exercise and stuff, so I'm not saying you don't have any experience of it, but how do you become such a staunch ally when it isn't something that really impacts you personally?
I mean, I got it wrong a lot, but so that, I think that's really important to say, like, you if you're in this position where you're trying to, you know, fight against weight stigma in the fitness industry, and you're sort of pushing back against fat phobia and thing, and you're doing that in a thin body, you're going to mess it up quite a lot. And you're going to have to listen to people who are saying, oh, well, you know, you don't know what it's like to, you know, X, Y, Z. And I think what it was for me is when I became a personal trainer, I had clients who were in fat bodies and had been trying to lose weight their whole lives, didn't feel comfortable in a gym. And very early on, I saw that, like, things that worked for me didn't necessarily work for them because their experiences were completely different. And I think it was connecting with other fitness professionals like Becky, who I set up FPAWS with. She knows what it's like to navigate fitness as an instructor in a fat body, and just having those open and honest conversations and actually just listening to her experiences really helped me then help my clients even more. So I learned really early on that me telling, you know, my clients who are in bigger bodies, oh, you know, you just need to give up on weight loss, not useful coming from a thin person. Like, it's so much easier for me to push back against diet culture and things like that as in the body that I am. So now I know that is not useful advice. It's not very empowering coming from me. Now I direct people to, you know, fat creators online, fat liberation, fat body positive accounts, that I say, you know, these are the people that you can learn from, who have got similar experiences to you, because that's a gap that I can't fill for you. And I think it's just knowing where I was limited, also working with my amazing clients and seeing how hard they find navigating the gym on their own, just navigating life, just generally, like the fact that going shopping is a stressful experience for them, and just listening to them. And I just got really angry about I got angry at the fact that some people have to live that way, live with that oppression every day. And I was just like, if I've got to somewhere, you know, in this process, it's got to be to stand up for people who don't feel like they've got a voice all the time, and to make sure that whatever I'm doing is encouraging them to just, all my clients want to do is exercise in a way that is meaningful for them. So I was like, I've got to make that possible in the way that I can. And sometimes I get tagged on Instagram, and people say, oh, this is my favorite body positivity account, and they've tagged me, and I have to send them a really polite message going, you know, please don't call me a body positivity account. Like, I send them articles written that sort of explains why, or they might say, oh, the best place to learn about weight stigma is, and they'll tag me and another thin male doctor, and, you know, that they're tagging two thin people as, you know, the best places to learn about weight stigma. I might be a good, like, stepping stone, but I'm not the goal voice that needs to be, you know, you might hear something first from me, and that might, you might have, somebody following me might go, oh, that's the first time I've heard it like that. But I'm not the end point. Like, they need to be pushed on to those other accounts. I think I've gone off on tangent.
No, you literally just, I guarantee you've blown the minds of several people listening to this. Like, you blow my mind every time you say it. Like, it shocks me, actually. It still shocks me when you say stuff like that, because it's so contrary to the human I don't know, the human condition and human nature to actually say, no, I want to take a step back. Actually, you listen to these people. And I want to talk about FPAWS. I want to talk about your work with Becky and Emma and everything. And I will get to that. But you mentioned about the experience that some of your clients had at the gym. And I wanted to talk a little bit about some of the stuff that I've been through, you know, just to have a chat about it, because I think a lot of people listening to this, if you are in a larger body, you've probably had a similar experience. You have no doubt at some point in time thought to yourself, I must go out and exercise in order to lose weight. And I think it's so important to make a huge distinction here between I must go out and be physically active because it's good for me. And when I say good for me, I mean, sometimes it's because it gets me out of the house. Sometimes it's because it's sociable. Sometimes it's because it helps clear my mind. Maybe it's because it helps with my mental health. Maybe it's because, you know, I need to be more flexible. My bones are aching, whatever. Like, it's good for so many different reasons. But exercise is not the cure. It is not the medicine that we are being sort of forced to believe now. And you just feel sometimes like if you're not exercising regularly, you're failing as a human being. And there have been periods of my life where literally I just haven't done any exercise at all. I, you know, I was working 72-hour weeks at one point in time in my the beginning of medicine. I was doing, you know, two days in a row. So literally going in on a Tuesday, coming home on a Thursday. I did not have time to exercise when I was doing that. There was times when, you know, you've got your lovely little 8-month-old at home. You know what it's like when you've got a small baby, like leaving them to go and do some meaningful exercise is really hard. And I couldn't accept that just putting the baby, you know, in a pushchair or in a sling and going for a walk was acceptable form of exercise. That wasn't good enough. Like, I had to get to the gym. I had to do this. I had to do that. So much pressure. Exercise for the purpose of weight loss as opposed to just to be physically active. And so I've done some really crazy things in my life. And I think if I have to pick the craziest things I have to pick, it's joining a gym. Because whilst a lot of people do join a gym to be healthy, joining a gym is probably some of the most unhealthiest experiences of my life. So explain to me why, first of all, why is it that in gyms, it seems to be like the majority of people there are really, really fit, athletic, and they wear these amazing clothes. And, you know, I think it's really important to be comfortable in your own skin and, like, you know, wear the clothes that suit you. But it often, you know, especially, I'm not going to say it's only men, because it's not only men, but often it's men in the gym doing that whole kind of like grunting thing. And it's, if you make that noise because you really are grunting, like, totally understand. But sometimes it just feels a little bit posed. And why do these things happen? They have perfect hair and they never sweat. Why don't they sweat, Amy? Please explain that to me. I'm sweating like a pig right now because it's really bloody hot in my room. But why don't they sweat? And why does their hair, like, just stay in that perfect ponytail? Why does their hair not go all frizzy and disgusting? Like, can you explain that to me, please? I know you can't, but, you know, I just thought I'd start the ball rolling. Why does it feel so toxic in a gym?
I think people do sweat. I mean, I sweat loads. So I'll be teaching a cycle class and the sweat is literally dripping down my face. My forearms are like wet as well. I don't know, it's a really random place to sweat from. But even my eyebrows don't stop the sweat going into my eyes. I end every class like not being able to see through the amount I've sweated. But I don't know if it's something to do with the lighting. Obviously, I can only speak for the gym that I work in. But when I look at members doing a cycle class, they look fine. They don't look red in the face. They don't look hot. They don't look sweaty. They all look absolutely fine. But if I catch one of them outside of the cycle studio in a bit, you know, a bit closer, I can see that they are very sweaty, just like me. But I think we're also different with, you know, some people are face sweaters, which is, I'm in camp face sweat. That is the first place I sweat from. And I'm also in camp tomato face. So my face will go bright red instantly. So I think it just depends how somebody's body reacts to cardio. I think it's normally on Instagram when somebody like looks absolutely perfect for their workout. And we've had so a local sort of Instagram fitness influencer in our gym once, and she was filming a workout. And what she did is, they, you know, she set up her very expensive camera on a tripod. She filmed about 10 seconds of each exercise, went and changed her clothes, came back, filmed some different exercises. So she was just making content. She wasn't actually filming a workout that she was doing. She was just making content for her followers. And of course, like doing those exercises for 10 seconds each and then going to change your clothes, you're not really going to work up a sweat. So of course, when she then will post those videos on her Instagram, she's going to look immaculate the whole way through. So that can sort of distort your idea of what exercise is going to look like. But when I teach a class, sometimes I have to turn the microphone on the headset away from me. Otherwise, I'm going to be like, like down it because I'm so knackered. And that's what most people are like. You know, and I sort of tend to make a joke about it. Like, you know, sorry, I just need to like, I'm going to turn this away because otherwise it's going to be like Darth Vader's teaching the class. Because that's very normal when you're, you know, really exerting yourself.
Right. That's so true, isn't it? I mean, it's funny to get anxious and apprehensive about something that is completely normal. Like if you're working out and you're not sweating and you're not out of breath, you're probably not working hard enough. Actually, probably, you know, I'm not saying all exercise should make you pant and make you red faced and sweaty, but that's generally a good sign, right? It's generally a sign that, you know, you're doing something and that's what you came there to do. But it's that apprehension. And I think it's me. It's I joke about gyms being very toxic places, but actually it's me. It's my issues. It's me walking into that space, feeling very excluded, feeling like all eyes are on me. People are judging me, looking at all the pictures on the walls and, you know, all the sort of happy, perky people at reception. And they all look a certain way and it doesn't look like me. And every time I join a gym, you know, you have to do like gym induction generally, don't you? I've not actually yet joined one of those gyms that doesn't have one of those. I think that should be my next thing. But you know, you have to do this horrible gym induction, and I've written a blog post about like just, you know, how much I lie when I'm in that gym induction. You know, I lie about everything. I fill in that questionnaire and it like asks me questions and I blatantly lie on it, which is stupid really, but I just don't feel like I can be honest. And then they like put you on all the machines and then, you know, like they get you on the stepping machine and you just feel like you have to prove yourself. You feel like you can't just be like, this is too much. You know, you feel like you just have to keep going. And then they're like, yeah, you're only on level one. Like you really do need to work harder. And you're like, fuck, I'm dying. and so I find that fitness spaces are not always very inclusive. And do you think that that's me as a slightly, perhaps, not paranoid, but I'm trying to think, you know, slightly defensive, on the defensive, you know, when I walk into that space, I'm already defending myself and I'm seeing things that aren't there? Or do you think that that's actually a fair assessment of some, not all, but some fitness spaces?
I think it's an absolutely fair assessment. I don't think it's a you problem at all, especially when you've got that lived experience of being judged wherever you go. People are making assumptions about how much you exercise, what you eat, how healthy you are. You're dealing with those microaggressions every day. So of course, when you walk into a fitness space, you're already, you know, you've got your back up, you're being hyper vigilant about it. But then there's people in there that are going to absolutely sort of reinforce why you're being hypervigilant and defensive. Because a while ago, it must have been maybe 2 years ago, I did a post about, you know, if you've got gym anxiety, you can do these things. And then I recently did a post where I sort of changed what I said, because I was like, you know, a thin person saying, oh, you know, no one's looking at you in the gym, that's not everyone's experience. That might be my experience because I look like, you know, the typical sort of fitness professional, the person that will go to the gym. So me saying, oh, no one's going to look at you when you're in the gym, they're just concentrating on themselves, that's not true for everybody. And some people will walk into that space and be judged and have people look at them and make assumptions about them. So again, that as a thin person saying, oh, you can get over your gym anxiety with these three tips, like it's not very helpful, because it's actually not helping the people who are suffering the most from gym nerves and gym anxiety for very, you know, valid reasons. So no, I don't think it's a you thing at all. I think it's a very valid way to feel when fitness does exclude so many people. And, you know, we see, I've got a client, like, he likes running. He does park runs. He did a lot of running during lockdown because it was one of the only form of exercises that he could do. But every time he went for a run, he was fat shamed, people shouting out of car windows. He had a session at the gym tonight and somebody said something to him as he walked in. And when he came into the gym, he told me about it, but he was then annoyed starting his session. He was, you know, he was aggravated and took him a while to snap out of it. You know, and I'm not going to push him and go, oh, you know, forget what they said, you know, they're losers. Like, you've got to really like validate that that happens to him. And it's not okay, and it's not his fault, but allow it. And I was like, you know, you're absolutely right to be angry about that. You don't need to just like brush it off. Like, stay angry for as long as you want about it, because it's not okay. And it was really interesting earlier you were saying that, like, you know, just because you weren't going to a gym or you wouldn't accept that a walk was exercise. And because I've got a client who's a paramedic. So he's a new client. Had a consultation with him not long ago. He's a paramedic, so he's like, you know, lugging those stretchers round out the back of an ambulance all day long. He's doing like, you know, 3 or 4 shifts back to back for 12, 14 hours. And then I was like, you know, and do you know, have any hobbies or anything outside of that? And he was like, yeah, I like to play football. I like to play a bit of tennis. And he then called himself lazy. So he's got a really hard going job. He plays football and he plays tennis. And he has internalized this idea that he's lazy just because he doesn't do any gym-based exercise. I think I sort of blew his mind a little bit when I was like, you know, I said, you're actually doing plenty. So if you didn't want to make time for the gym, you don't have to. And then, you know, somebody who's, I mean, it's a terrible business plan from my point of view, isn't it? Like, he's been for a couple of weightlifting sessions because he's interested to learn. But I think just someone taking that pressure off and saying, you know, you don't actually have to make time for this if you don't want to, he was just like, whoa. And that's what I say to all my clients, like, if they've got a job that really tires them out, like, they need to be really careful about how they set their intention for the gym. Because if somebody's got a job where they're on their feet all day, you don't want to then be doing a leg day to the point where you can't walk the next day and do your job because your legs hurt so much. You know, if your job's really, you know, makes you very stressed, and you know, then you've got the opportunity to pick exercises which are great at de-stressing. You know, there's no one best way to exercise. You've got to figure out what it is that you can get from it and then go in that direction. And a lot of people have just never thought of it that way, because they're just going, oh, well, you know, I've got to squat because that's what everyone else online is doing, or I've got to do deadlifts because that's what so-and-so is doing. And, you know, sometimes I try not to be difficult when I ask my questions in a consultation, but when someone's like, oh, I really want to get good at squatting, I'm like, why?
Yeah. Because that's what we're supposed to do. We're supposed to squat and do burpees, you know, like, there's like things that, you know, you're supposed to be able to do. And it's funny because I really like Pilates, and there are certain things that I can do in Pilates, and there are certain things that I really struggle to do. I have relatively when I'm working out, I can build up my core, but there are just things that I just can't do. So one of the things is like lying on your back and getting all the way up. Like, I just can't. My tummy's too big, and I've got massive hernia from being pregnant. So I've got, like, you know, rectus diastasis. I've got, like, I can put 2 fists in between my rectus abdominis muscles, and I've never been able to get them back. And that's probably because I should have done something about it ages ago, and I never did because I was too ashamed to go and tell somebody, blah, 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 blah. But it just, I always used to feel like such a failure because I couldn't do some of the things in this Pilates class. I could do probably 75% of it. And it's only now that I look back and think, I went to the class, and even if I couldn't get my body from lying all the way sitting, like, I'm still engaging my core, trying to get my body up to sitting. And, you know, and I still could do all the other exercises, and, you know, my hips and everything else I was pretty good with. So what if I couldn't do what everyone else can do? But there's something that's something that I've learned in the last few months, you know, that, you know, yoga, similar thing. I love yoga, but there are certain things I just physically struggle with because my tummy and my boobs get in my way. And no one has ever told me that's okay, but you don't have to be able to do that. Just, you know, you're here, you're doing something, that'll do. What do you say to people who just hate exercise? Like, there'll be people listening who just, exercise is a punishment, or we're just too freaking busy, or we're depressed and we can't be bothered to get out of the house, or, and so many different reasons why people just hate exercise and are made to feel really ashamed of the fact that they just aren't exercising at the moment.
So I think again, a bit like my client who had sort of internalized that only gym-based exercise counts, I think you have to really, first of all, really broaden what you think of as exercise. So even if you're just cleaning your house for 10 minutes, like, you're moving. Like, it doesn't have to be steps. It doesn't have to be this quantifiable thing with a number and a goal at the end of it. It can be anything. You know, if somebody does a school run twice a day, you know, you're moving, that's fine. Like, because at the end of the day, for most people, and again, I can't say all people because nothing is true for all people. For most people, moving feels good. So if they hate exercise, they've probably not ever found something that they enjoy doing. And they haven't thought about it broadly enough. So roller skating is becoming like really popular at the minute. Like, I see so many people on Instagram. One of my favorites is, I think it's Fat Girl Has Moxie. Moxie is a brand of roller skates. And it's just this amazing woman. Like, she lives in America on the beach somewhere, just roller skating like down lovely scenery all the time. And I think as well, a lot of people who, you know, are in larger bodies, they haven't seen their own body type doing exercises.
Right.
So if, I mean, one of my clients, she said, oh, I'll never be able to do a push-up because of my size. And then I got a video of Meg Boggs up doing push-ups, who's bigger than her. And I was like, well, you know, you're blaming your size for not being able to do things because that's what you've been taught. You know, that's the only message you've received is, you know, that you can't do it because of your size. So I think it's like proving them that, you know, they can actually do whatever they want, and also finding yourself a good coach, because there's like 1,000 core exercises you could do that don't involve, you know, crunching up from the floor. And it takes a good coach to find something that works for your client, instead of just going, you can't do this, like, you know, try harder, or we'll keep going at it. Well, why? No, there's like 1,000 other things you could do instead of trying to do that one exercise. Like, people just not force themselves. You know, if exercise seems daunting and a punishment, or they're suffering from, you know, depression, it means that they can't leave the house, or for whatever else. I think it's important for them to remember that, like, exercise is just that one tiny bit of the puzzle. And although it might make some of us feel good when we do it, there are other ways to be healthy, and there are other ways to make yourself feel good. Like, it doesn't have to be the exercise.
And we don't owe society. I think that's the other thing. You've seen how much abuse and trolling I get online. I would say about 50% of it is from, not necessarily fitness professionals, but it's fitness professionals or people who are rather obsessed with fitness. And some of them are kind of sort of zealots. You know, they are fitness fanatics. I don't know any other way to describe them, because, you know, if they were talking about religion instead of fitness, you know, you would call them religious fanatics or religious nuts. It's just the fact that they're talking about exercise instead. You know, there was one guy who posted some nasty meme once about me, and tagged me in it, you know, and was really blatant about it, but was just basically calling me a lazy cow, because he was like, well, I'm a nurse, so I work even harder than you, I work longer shifts than you, and yet I still go to the gym 5 times a week, 1 hour a week. I don't care who it is, whether my kids need me, whether my missus needs me, how long I've been working. I never ever fail to find time to exercise. And I remember reading this message that he'd written and publicly posted on Instagram, a nurse, an actual nurse, he works in a local hospital, to me, and thinking, well, you say that, once upon a time I would have found that very threatening, but now I read it and I feel really sad, because your poor wife and your poor kids, you know, and also poor you. Like, if you're working a 12 and a half hour shift as a nurse in a local hospital, I know how exhausting that is. You know, when you get home, forcing yourself to go to the gym 5 times a week for an hour at least each time, you know, just so that you can look a certain way. And of course he did look a certain way, you know, he posed, you know, lifting, and you could see all of his muscles and his abs and his, you know, and I was just like, yeah, but, you know, for what? Like, you've almost developed, I mean, I don't know you, I can't say that for sure, but this doesn't sound healthy to me. It sounds very unhealthy. What, you know, you've seen me talk about these people, and you've seen me, you know, being affected by these people. Why are there, you know, why are there fitness professionals out there that seem to really have it in for people like me? What is it that I'm doing to piss them off?
I don't think you're doing anything in particular at all. You're just existing, and that's the unfortunate, you know, part of it. But again, this is no one simple answer. So I think for a lot of people, they've allowed fitness to become their identity and they don't know anything, you know, beyond that. And I can sympathize with that because at one point in my life, that was me. Like fitness was like all I had, you know. I was like, it becomes, if you're not at the gym or you're not doing your workout or you're not talking about your workout, you feel like you haven't got anything else to offer the world, really, like of interest. And again, the way society's set up and media doesn't help, because if there's anything to do with, you know, health on TV or in magazines, it's always food or exercise. So again, I think, and I know that, you know, the sort of people who say these sort of things, if we were to call them uneducated or inexperienced, they would absolutely blow a lid, wouldn't they? Because, oh, how dare you call me uneducated? But it's actually a down to a bit, you know, a lack of education in understanding the wider determinants of health beyond food and exercise, because they live in a situation where they've never had to consider their health outside of those things. So, you know, for somebody who's like got a chronic illness, for example, they've automatically been put in a position where they've got to think about their health in other ways that can't just be simply, you know, solved with diet and exercise. If you're in a low income family, you've already got to think about your health in other ways than food and exercise, because, you know, you might not have certain, you know, fruit and vegetables available to you. You might not have time to exercise. And I think there is such a thing as not having time to exercise, because sometimes other things come first. And, you know, this guy, if he, you know, likes to do his long shifts and go to the gym despite, you know, the needs of his family, and they're all happy with that, that's great. But what he doesn't understand is that's just one experience. And he's only got his experiences intersect with his life in one particular way that doesn't happen in other people's lives, because we're all so different, aren't we? Like everything he's experienced in his life, everything that makes him who he is, you know, the color of his skin, where he was born, you know, what kind of personality he's got, all these things come together to make his experiences. And if part of that is going to the gym every day, regardless of what else is going on, and that makes him feel good, that's great. And we're not going to be, we can't say, you know, you're unhealthy. You've got an obsession with exercise. You know, he might do, but he might also be really, you know, really balanced with his exercise. We just would never know. But then what he needs to understand is there are also people whose experiences and, you know, what they've been through in their lives and what makes them who they are, their experiences intersect in their life in a different way. And exercise might not be part of that. And both are fine. And both are completely individual, and there's no need to like attack one for the other. And like you said, there's no need to exercise if you don't want to. You don't have to prove that you're being healthy by exercising. We seem to be drawn to these people online. I mean, I did especially, who are like super fit and do all these amazing things with their body. And for some reason, you're like drawn to them and you want to be like them. And you suddenly like them more than other people who don't do that. And then you think, why? Like, why does this command such respect from people? And it's just literally the way that health has been portrayed by society for such a long time, that, you know, that it looks one way and that it achieves certain things. I remember reading a post where someone had put something really daft, like, oh, you know, you're not strong until you can do a pull-up. And I was like, how ridiculous. Like, how are you measuring strength through, you know, millions of individuals and saying that some aren't strong because they can't pull their own body weight up? Like, and applying that to every single person who exercises. Like, what a gatekeeping, toxic thing to say. Like, you're not strong until you can do a pull-up. Like, how ridiculous is that? Like, I think a lot of people, they don't actually realise they're creating more barriers to exercise than actually encouraging people to do it. So, you know, making a meme about you online and calling you lazy, like, that's not going to make you want to go into fitness spaces where other people like him are going to be hanging out. Like, he's actually creating more hurdles for you to get moving without even realising. And also, it's just a really shitty, dicky thing to do as well, isn't it? Like, you know.
there's that.
Yeah.
But it's interesting. I mean, when I started learning about beauty bias and just beauty bias in general, actually, because that's how I first got into it. I was, neck deep in diet culture, but was already starting to look into beauty bias as a whole. Because it was a topic that fascinated me, and I was reading a book about it, and it didn't cover weight individually, it wasn't just about weight, but certainly weight came into it. And I remember this is the first time I realised that, you know, that there was a beauty ideal and that beauty was super important. Because once upon a time, I used to dismiss beauty. I'd say, oh, but it's just beauty. Like, there's more to me. I've got brains. I've got, you know, I've got personality. But actually, beauty is hugely important, because what psychologists tell us is that beauty is associated with all sorts of other very important virtues, and that we're taught that from a very early age. You know, even when we're in, before we get to primary school, you know, in nursery age, we begin to learn that what is beautiful is also good. You know, it makes a person popular, but it also makes a person kinder, it makes a person more lovable. So when we're drawn to these people, it's because they represent beauty. And as human beings, we've all been taught that what is beautiful is just superior in every way. It's why so many serial killers, you know, were supposedly attractive, because they could get away with it. You know, they were far more likely to get away with what they were doing. It's why so many CEOs and so many kind of narcissists also have, you know, good looks, because that's what allows them to be. That's not always the case, because sometimes they don't look great and they still manage to get away with stuff. But you know, it's that idea that if you're beautiful, somehow you're better and more superior in every way. And of course the reverse is true. If you are not beautiful by society standards, then it's exactly the opposite. You are inferior in every way, and you always have to spend your life proving yourself to people. And I always feel like, you know, whatever sort of space I'm in, until recently, I felt like I had to justify myself. If I went to a restaurant, you know, I had to order the right food so that people would say, oh, well, you know, at least she's trying. You know, I couldn't just sit there and eat like a bacon double cheeseburger. Like, I couldn't eat that in front of people, because they'd be like, well, there you go. And in the workplace, I always had to be good. You know, if they were offering the biscuits around, I always had to say no, not for me, because I couldn't possibly admit that I quite fancied a biscuit in that moment. It's like I'm constantly having to prove myself, and that is very much the case with exercise. I always felt like I needed to tell people, oh, you know, I may be fat, but like, I exercise 5 hours a week, or, you know, I go to the gym for like an hour and a half at a time, like five times a week. I'm healthy, which is just, you know, first of all, very ableist. I realize now, because there are plenty of people who physically can't exercise because they are incapacitated, they've got terrible fibromyalgia or whatever. And also, it's, you know, it's massively fat phobic, or, you know, anti-fat, because it's like we're always wrong and we're always being judged and everyone's assuming that we're unhealthy. But by trying to prove them wrong, we're still buying into that same premise, aren't we, that fat people are unhealthy, so we have to prove that we're not. Whereas I'm quite enjoying, you know, just being like, yeah, like, sometimes I really don't, you know, don't want to get out of bed, and sometimes I don't exercise, and I, you know, I haven't done leg day for a really long time, and I'm all right with that. But that being said, I also, like you say, I enjoy moving, and sometimes I like really want to go and move, and sometimes my dog looks at me and of course I'm going to move because he's gorgeous and I have to take him for a walk. Tell me a little bit about F-Pause. I mean, don't tell me because I know all about it, but you mentioned Becky, and, you know, you do this amazing thing, and I'm not going to even try and get involved. I'll let you describe it. Tell us about F-Pause.
So we'll start right at the beginning. So when you are a weight inclusive PT or anti-diet or haze or however you want to, you know, align yourself, you know, in the fitness industry, basically you don't make people lose weight or go on diets. You just focus on them moving in a way that's meaningful to them, free from diet culture. When usually the case is you're the only one in your gym who has got those beliefs and that ethos. And I will say straight away, I'm incredibly lucky because the PTs I work with are very open-minded. They all follow me on Instagram, so they see everything I post. They see all the fat liberation content that I repost. I sometimes go on a bit of a tangent and I share loads of pictures of, like, you know, these lovely different sized bodies. So they see all that and they know exactly what I'm about. And none of them have ever tried to, you know, attack me or question me. But again, I've got to appreciate that that's probably because I look like they do. Some of the younger PTs that have joined recently, I've been opening a dialogue with them about, like, my experiences with disordered eating and exercise bulimia and that sort of thing. And they've been really great with saying, like, oh, how can I, like, you know, what questions can I ask my own clients just to make sure that they're not, like, you know, going down that path. And they've been brilliant. But you can be very lonely in your gym, or, you know, a lot of weight inclusive trainers operate online, so they don't even have a team or anybody to like talk to. So you end up finding these people online, just like we found each other and we found Jeanette and everything like that. And it's just, that is one of the great things about social media and the internet, for all its faults and all the crap out there. That is like the saving grace and the silver lining, is just that connection that you can have with people. So, you know, I started following other fitness professionals. I ended up in a Facebook group with some others. And there was a couple that I just interacted with a lot more than others. So we set up a little like WhatsApp group, like 10 or 12 of us. So we took more like direct and daily conversations into there. You know, we'd have rants about stuff that annoyed us in the gym, or, you know, we'd ask for advice if we had a client that was struggling. And we just sort of built a community, and we just started to get more and more annoyed at everything. You know, something would happen in the news, like the new, campaign would come out, like public health campaign. And we'd all sit there and have a good old moan about like how crap it was and how, it, you know, just felt really frustrating. And I remember just speaking to Becky. So she's Misfits Workout. She is awesome. So she does dance workouts online and in a community hall sort of local to her, if anybody is interested in, you know, really inclusive like online dance workouts, a fun way to move. Definitely check her out. But I just said to Becky one day, I was just like, we should do something. Like, I don't know what we can do. I don't know what it's going to be. I don't know what it will look like, but we should do something. You know, start a campaign or start a group or just anything. So FPAWS was born out of that. We organised a Zoom and got as many personal trainers on it as possible. And we just sort of said, you know, like, what can we do? Like, what action can we take? Because we're all sort of waiting for someone else to do it. You know, there's lots of, you know, bigger accounts on Instagram, bigger names, bigger weight inclusive PTs out there. We're sort of like waiting for them to do something. And obviously they're all very busy. So we were like, well, instead of talking, we'll do something. We'll go for it. So we made a little campaign, wrote down campaign aims. And that very, very much is where it started. It was with a campaign aimed at Active IQ and SIMSPA, which are the governing bodies for like fitness qualifications in the UK. Because we thought, you know, it's all right arguing with people online about why personal trainers can be problematic. We want to go in at the head of the beast. Yes. and influence how personal trainers are educated. But we also, alongside that, the two main aims were to sort of center the voices who'd been affected by weight stigma and fat phobia in gyms, and give them a place to like share their experiences. So we were doing that using our Instagram page and on our website now as well. If somebody has got a complaint to make about a gym space or a certain fitness professional, they can do that anonymously through there. And our plan is to then get in touch with those places and say, you know, this happened in your gym, you know, take some time to read this information about weight stigma, and sort of try and just educate as many places as we can in the fitness industry. And then another, because with the community element with the personal trainers, you know, with the WhatsApp group and the Facebook group, is such an important part of it, because you can feel so lonely when you're doing this sort of approach. The other thing we desperately wanted to do was support other PTs and, you know, and fitness instructors. So we set up FPAWS on a Mighty Network in a little community, and we put on CPD sessions. Emma, she's amazing. She does Science Saturdays, so she does she takes one element of like weight science and delivers a session which will help PTs, you know, apply that to their clients. So she'd done one on menopause, she'd done one on, you know, what are the effects of exercise on, like, you know, people with, you know, higher BMIs and that sort of thing. And she's doing one on research skills coming up, so that people, if they're reading research, they can see what biases to look for. So she does Science Saturdays, and I do the community-led CPD. So we talk about how to do a consultation, but as a weight-inclusive personal trainer. So we give the PTs on our network like ideas for questions they can ask their clients, how to navigate conversations where the client is, you know, really set on weight loss, or is, you know, struggling with coming away from weight loss. So we just basically just provide everything that like a weight inclusive personal trainer would need to feel supported in what they do, because it can be really tricky when you've got that client who's just so focused on weight loss, but they still want to work with you. But advocacy is at the heart of what we do. Like when we get a complaint about a gym or even a course provider. So we've had some people complain about their level 2 and 3 personal training qualifications and like having some dodgy tasks they've been told they've got to do, like make a poster on the O word. Like you don't need to understand the ins and outs of weight to be a fitness professional or to be a fitness instructor. A lot of the things that the courses are doing are not actually reflective of the standards that you need to be a personal trainer. They're sort of putting their own spin on it. And, you know, they think they're helping their would-be fitness professionals by making them do certain tasks on that course, but they're not at all. They're probably just, they're pumping their ideas full of very problematic ideas about people.
It's interesting you say that, because there are a few accounts, very, very large accounts, very influential accounts on Facebook and Instagram. There's one in particular, I'm not going to say their names, but you know who they are. They're on Facebook predominantly. And they are, you know, beyond toxic. This particular individual, this gentleman, he's a gentleman, what a way to describe him. He's just so horrible, like so horrible. But there are, you know, I see all the followers. I'm terrified for all of these people that are allowing themselves to be fat shamed and just in a really toxic and disgusting way on a regular basis. And I think it's interesting to talk about this. For a long time, I put up with this kind of stuff. I thought it was what I deserved. It very much matched up with the inner voice in my head. You know, everything that they were saying matched so much with what I believed about myself that I accepted it. But there are people who perhaps might be listening, or, you know, might have been, you know, somebody might have said to them, oh, you should go and listen to this conversation. And what would you say to that person, that person who has, you know, paid this membership to this particular nasty, toxic influencer who fat shames people on a regular basis? Does fat shaming have a place, a role to play in fitness ever? Is there ever a reason to do it?
Absolutely not. Not only is it like morally incorrect, but the research shows that it doesn't work. So, you know, not only is it a horrible thing to do, like it's not going to have the results that people, you know, assume it's going to. So no, it's just absolutely no place for it. I mean, so some people might say, you know, I really need motivating and, you know, I need a bit of tough love. And I think that's, again, this idea of motivation has been sort of twisted by the fitness industry. Like nobody is motivated all the time. And if somebody is able to exercise quite frequently, it's not usually a case of motivation. It's usually that they've got the circumstances, the support network, you know, all those things aligned, which enable them to go and do that exercise. So even our meme friend who, you know, does his long nurse shifts, he's still got a support system in place, which enables him to go to the gym at the end of his shift, whether he would like to admit it or not. It's not like his kids are at home on their own, you know, in single digit ages, like fending for themselves. He's got somebody there who's looking after him, whether it's his wife or, you know, he's got parents that help him out. There's always some support system, which means that, you know, they're unable to do those sorts of things. So a lot of the time when people say, oh, I need tough love or I need motivating, it's not. They need help understanding what their barriers are. Like, what is it that makes them feel unmotivated? Is it because they're picking an exercise they absolutely despise? You know, are they doing it for the wrong reasons? Because again, research consistently shows that aesthetic goals, you know, they don't result in what you want. They're hard to reach, so you end up doing more disordered things to get there. They don't keep you going. They're not long lasting motivators.
What does research say is the most motivating kind of things that you can do if you're somebody that wants to be active but perhaps lacks the motivation?
So intrinsic benefits. So intrinsic just means anything that comes from within. So on the opposite end, obviously, you've got your extrinsic, which is all your appearance-based goals. So that might be, you know, you want a six-pack or you want to lose X amount of pounds or whatever. They're all extrinsic goals. So they're something that's like you're measuring externally. they're not very good motivators, but all the things that come from within are great motivators. And again, research consistently shows that intrinsic benefits and intrinsic motivation is long lasting. It's you're likely to carry on something for a long time if you've got that intrinsic motivation. And they're all things that unfortunately are not quantifiable, because like as humans, we love to attach numbers to things. We love to tick boxes. We love something that we can hold and celebrate. So unfortunately, there are all those things that can't be seen, or, you know, you can't snap a quick picture of them and put them on Instagram in the same way that you can snap a screenshot of your Fitbit. But they're things like feeling proud of yourself, you know, sort of like the feeling of accomplishment that you get when you complete a certain lift that you've been working on. So, for example, if your goal is to deadlift your own body weight, like the process of going through that, of getting better each time, and that feeling of accomplishment, that's going to keep you coming back for more, because it's something that's coming from within. You leave the gym feeling proud of yourself, like, you know, you're buzzing for more. So all those things that just can't be measured, unfortunately, but they're the best motivators. And they're a good coach will help you find those things. And I think for anybody listening who, you know, is thinking about maybe getting a personal trainer, but is not sure, there are definitely red flags that some are really obvious and some aren't so obvious. But being, say, if your goal is to just generally feel fitter and healthier because you want to run around with your grandkids, but then that personal trainer is going, right, let's take your measurements. How do those measurements translate to the goal of running around with your grandkids? Those two things are completely separate. You can't measure running around with your grandkids with a tape measure or a scale. So that's not part of your goal. So why is it being used? So you've got to really think critically about everything that a trainer might be suggesting or, you know, telling you to do. And you've got to be a bit of a why person, you know, why are we doing this? Why is this going to help? If my goal is this, what is this for? Why are we doing this exercise? And if it puts that trainer on the spot and they're not sure, then they probably haven't got a good reason why they are doing those things. Because, you know, I'm sure lots of people walk into a gym, and if they're of a certain size, they're going to have their goal assumed as it's going to be weight loss. But if you're sat there telling that trainer, no, this is my goal, I want to get stronger, and they're still getting their measuring tape out, well, how are you measuring my strength with a measuring tape? That doesn't translate to that goal. So I think it's time that people could really start sticking up for themselves a little bit more. And I know that's hard. Again, it's easy for me to say in the body that I'm in, but that you can ask questions. You can say, what is this for? Why are we doing this? And be critical.
At the end of the day, you know, you're paying for a service. And I think that's what we have to remember. I mean, you know, I think that's something that's hit me more recently as well, is that if I am paying for any service, really, you know, if I expect a delivery to come on a certain day and it doesn't come, like I have something to say to the person that's delivering that product to me. So the same goes if I, you know, if I've engaged a personal trainer or gone to a class or whatever, and it was for a certain thing and it didn't transpire, then I have the right to say, hang on a second, that's not what you promised me, and I paid you for something. And I think that's really hard to do. I think you're right. I think that we haven't been trained, especially in people in larger bodies, we've been taught to just kind of accept whatever you get, because that's all you deserve. But I think it's very empowering. I think a lot of people will be listening to this feeling very empowered to go away and to say, you know, actually, what is it that I want to get out of physical activity, out of, you know, I'm not even going to call it exercise, but just activity. What is it that I want to get out of it? And, you know, how am I going to achieve that? And who's going to help me to achieve that? So thank you so much. A couple of questions before we go. First of all, is there like a database for like weight inclusive PTs? Like, is there a way that you can find them?
So on our network, we just put very personalized inquiries out. So I get messages quite frequently on my personal Instagram. So people are welcome to message me if they're looking for a PT, whether it's online or in their area. They just tell me what they're looking for, where they are, and I'll put a message both on the FPAWS Instagram and on our network. So we can then tailor it. So we can find somebody near you, or if you're happy to do online sessions, there's loads of online PTs in our network. So somebody can get moving in some way with the right person. definitely.
Amazing. Thank you so much. So you are at Amy Snelling PT on Instagram. For those, I don't even know if we said it, but FPAWS stands for Fitness Professionals Against Weight Stigma. How do people get in touch with you if they want to find you?
On Instagram, we are just at Against Weight Stigma. All the links are in our bio to our website and to the FPAWS network. So if there's any personal trainers or fitness professionals listening and they want to join our network, you can find all the links on there. You're welcome to message me on my personal account as well if people need to or have any questions or are looking for a personal trainer. Like I said, like happy to do that admin.
Oh, Amy, you're going to regret that. First thing we're going to do when I hang up is I'm going to be like, I need you to find me a personal trainer near me, because I keep saying to you, you live too far away. Everyone who's been listening will know now why I love Amy so much and why we have become such fast friends. We are all part, so over the next few episodes, you are going to hear from various members of our organisation, Health Professionals Against Weight Stigma. We totally stole that from Amy. Like, she was fitness professionals and I was like, can we just change the fitness to health and then just keep it? And she very magnanimously said, yeah, sure, no probs. So that's what we are. And you'll be hearing a lot more about us. And I'm so grateful for you to come, for coming on. I'm so glad you volunteered first, which was so cool. I was like, who's coming first? And you were just like, I'll do it.
No one's invited me on a podcast before. So I was like, oh, me.
Have you never been on a podcast before? I feel very privileged now. How exciting. Well, that's a shame. You will be on lots of podcasts from now onwards, I can tell. So thank you so much. And thank you, everyone, for listening. And we'll see you next time.
Thank you for listening. And I hope you've enjoyed yourself today. If you want to get more involved with the Fat Doctor podcast, then why not check out my Patreon? I am at the Fat Doctor. And on there, I offer a variety of different tiers. Depending on how much you can afford each month, you get the same access no matter which tier you're subscribed to. And one of the many benefits of joining my Patreon is you get a chance to listen to some extended podcast episodes. I've also got a Facebook group, Friends of the Fat Doctor, and there's my website, www.fatdoctor.com. For those of you who follow me on social media, I'm on Instagram, I'm on Twitter, I'm even on TikTok, can you believe it? Join me next time for another episode tackling weight stigma and fat oppression.